What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go paper-tarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
My name is Ben Bolin. I hang out with Scott and I write some videos here. Scott.
Yes.
Today we're going to talk about a luxury vehicle.
Fantastic. Luxury, just a luxury or a luxury exotic vehicle? Because it's funny how they've lumped those into one category now, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. A luxotic.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something you just didn't see in the past, I don't think.
No, I think you're right. I think it's a relatively recent development if you look over the whole span of luxury vehicles historically.
Yeah, I think so.
But what we are talking about – now, this is going to sound so shallow, Scott. When I was but a wee tyke, I loved the vehicles we're talking about, which are
– Ferraris.
I loved Ferraris almost entirely because – I was one of those kids who had the poster in his room of the red Ferrari.
Oh, good for you.
And it painted my room red to match it.
Did you really?
It looked like a nosebleed in there, man. And I loved it because, you know, I was a kid. I didn't even think I was ever going to grow up enough to drive.
Face painting?
No face painting.
Oh, good.
No, never took it there. Mm-hmm. But I just loved the name. And I didn't know it was someone's last name. I thought... There was just literally a group of people who sat around a table and made up car names. Mm-hmm. But as we find out, as we're going to look at in this podcast, a lot of people across the world never lost that fascination with Ferrari. Mm-hmm. I eventually did because I am so very cheap. I just realistically, I can't see myself in one.
You've come to the realization that it's probably not going to happen. Is that right?
Yeah, I've dealt with that.
You haven't given up because you never give up wanting more, right?
No.
But have you just maybe decided that even if you did have the money, you might not make that purchase?
Yeah, one day at a time, man. I could buy an awesome boat for that much money.
You know what? I'll be honest with you about this. I've been looking at – remember I mentioned project cars not long ago?
Yep.
I've been looking around, and not that this is anywhere in my range, of course, okay? But when you think about the Ferrari, like, the 308 GTS that Magnum PI had, everybody can kind of picture that in their mind, right? Mm-hmm. You can find one of those in rough condition right now for around $20,000.
Really?
$20,000, yeah. And if you want to go, you know, of course, the better condition, the better, you know, the higher the price.
Yeah.
But you can also find, like, right around this area, I found a 2004 Ferrari F355, $44,000.
That's bargain basement.
And it's not a damaged car. It's not a salvage car. It's not. There's nothing wrong with it. They I don't know what the story is. How they got it so low? If it was, you know, a bank owned car or what? But they're just trying to unload it quick. And it's $45,000. $44,000.
Sounds like one of those urban legends, my friend.
No, it's not. And you know, honestly. I mean, to be realistic about it, it's worth probably 50, maybe 54,000, something like that.
And is that with no work? That's as is.
That's as is, but it's beautiful.
Yeah,
I've seen the car; it's perfect. There's, you know, back tires are, you know, a little bit low on tread, of course, from the previous owner, but really, other than that, the car is perfect, and it would be a quick $10,000 that you could make on a car flip if you wanted to. But, you know, you'd have to front the money. But what I'm saying is that it's within the realm of reason. It's possible that, you know, someone could spend $50,000 on a Ferrari instead of getting, you know, I guess the option would be like maybe at that level a Corvette or something like that. Mm-hmm. Your choice. I mean, it's a 6-year-old car now at this point, almost 7.
Well, I'm still, even though I've dealt with the idea of not being a Ferrari owner, which is one day at a time for me,
yeah, sure.
You know, that's how I do it.
Yeah.
I'm still fascinated with these vehicles because they get to a certain point in just the beauty of the design where it's almost like art. Mm-hmm. Really, really fast, really sexy art that's good at cornering.
Very good. Very good.
I was kidding about that, good at cornering. but one thing that we talked about off air last week or so was this fascinating article that one of your guys actually.
Yeah, one of the freelance writers that I manage here has written an article about how long it takes to build a Ferrari. And we figured this would be a good topic for us to tackle today. So, I mean, should we just give them the number? Just tell them how long it takes? You want to hold it out?
What do you think?
I think we just tell them because there's a lot more to this than that. Because we're going to be talking about world car production numbers, Ferrari numbers in specific, a lot of information. So you want me to just hit them with the number?
Lay it on me.
All right. We're talking about the latest, latest Ferrari. I was going to say latest and greatest, but that's up to debate. So.
Oh yeah, don't we didn't say greatest.
So we're talking about the Ferrari California here, okay, and not the first Ferrari California because this in the 50s and 60s, Ferrari made another California model, and then it went away for several decades, and now the name's come back again, and it's different. It's a different car.
Yeah, don't call it a comeback.
No, we'll tell you why it's different in a little while. It takes approximately 3 weeks to build a Ferrari California from end to end. From start to finish. And that's not all at one place. That happens in two different buildings. There's an engine shop. And that's where, you know, one of the things that this article points out is that, you know, since the beginning, they've had this mystique of having, in fact, the art writer says mystique of being hand-built.
Sure.
Or handcrafted is how the person put handcrafted workmanship. And although most of this car is assembled by hand, some of it is now being assembled by robots. Some have there's some, you know, robotic control going on in the engine area where, you know, they do it for precision and just cleanliness, things like that, so that, you know, it's 100% accurate every time. That's not the only place too. I mean, I found out later that the leather is also hand cut. Leather is machine cut
now.
And then hand sewn. Now it is. It used to be all hand cut, hand sewn. Now it's machine cut, hand sewn. And that's just for efficiency, so they can get the most out of every piece of leather. It's not that they're, you know, scrimping on the materials or anything like that. Of course, they're just trying to make the most out of what they have.
Well, let's also take a second to point out for those who don't know, the Ferrari California is not made in California.
No.
It is made in a little town called Maranello. Oh, I'm butchering this so bad.
That's all right.
I guess it's my turn.
Sure, go ahead. You take it.
Maranello, Italy. And that is the Ferrari factory. And when I hear about this place, it sort of reminds me of Willy Wonka.
Yeah, you know what? It probably is. What made you think of that, though? Because have you ever seen the photos of people working there?
I've seen photos of the building. I haven't seen the photos of the guys. Okay, are they all in like white?
No, close. They're all wearing Ferrari red jumpsuits.
Ah, okay.
And have very much the company look. You know, the very bright red, of course, Ferrari red.
Yeah.
Jumpsuits when they build these cars, you know, to maintain cleanliness and just uniform appearance, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point where we're talking about where all the pieces come over to be assembled. Right,
right, so, when it all comes together.
So these sub-assemblies that are built elsewhere, and they come to the factory, and that's where they're hand-assembled piece by piece, and that's why it takes so long. It is a three-week process. There's about 30 stations, and each one the car stays at for about a half an hour. And there's another line that produces V12 engines, because the California is a V8. Mm-hmm. There's another line that produces the cars that are V12 cars. Those cars stay on the assembly line for each station, rather, for about an hour versus a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the factory is kind of interesting. If you can catch the video of this at all, just you maybe want to. And they say that it's not a bad place to work, really. And according to this article, it says there's only one shift at the Ferrari factory. They don't work, you know, two or three shifts like you'll find up in Detroit,
right,
or, you know, wherever else they're manufacturing cars. It's just that they work one shift. Maybe that's part of the reason why it takes longer to build these cars. You know, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And at 5 o'clock, it says that there's no rush to get out of the factory. It's not, it's like everybody just kind of casually strolls out whenever they get out. And there's no, you know, I've got to get home and do this. I just hate being here, that type of attitude. It's just a nice place to work, apparently.
It's Italy. You don't have to be in a hurry.
That's true.
It's sort of
true.
Here we have
the European way, huh?
Maybe it's only Italian. We're going to get some. I'm sorry. We're going to get some mail.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
Well, let's. Do you want to talk about the numbers for the Ferrari?
Yeah, I do. And there's a couple of asterisks, I guess, that we got to add to this.
Yes.
Is that you know, they're talking about now that, and this is kind of a hazy number here, as far as I'm concerned, because they never really outright say how many there are. I couldn't find a number for California's outright, but our writer claims that there's probably about 8,500 cars a year being produced right now. 8,500, which is quite a few.
And of those, the Ferrari California is about 2,500.
Oh, really? Okay.
Approximately?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right. About 2,500 a year. That's right. It's because they have many other cars that they build at the same time. I don't have a list of the models right in front of me, but I think there's four, maybe five being produced right now. So, right when we're talking. So, yeah, 8,500 cars a year. The problem with this number is that although it sounds like not many, it's cutting into the exclusivity of the Ferrari brand, because a lot of people say, well, you know, why aren't they building 1,000 a year? Why won't they just keep it, you know, minimal like it used to be? And if you want an example of how exclusive the Ferrari Club was at one point.
Ooh, I do.
And it kind of, you know what, it still is. I'll give them that. I think it still is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, every year, of course, there's going to be an addition of however many cars you've built that year, obviously. There's going to be some, you know, some that go away due to, you know, crashes. Some are going to be used for road courses only. Some are going to be
stunt cars in movies.
Museums. Yeah, exactly. There'll be some that just kind of, well, some that are just forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, found hopefully decades from now, you know, in a barn somewhere.
That'd Fingers crossed.
Cool. But here, let me show you how exclusive it used to be compared to now, and why somebody might have the argument that, you know, maybe it's not quite an exclusive club like it used to be, that, you know, anybody can get one even though they're $200,000. Okay? Because the California is $192,000, I think.
Yeah.
And that's without any extras, any, you know, additional features that you want to add.
Yeah.
Okay. Ferrari's been around since 1947. That's when they first built their, or when Ferrari first built his first road going cars.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a list of production numbers from 47 to 2001, and then I've got numbers that go beyond that. You know, in between there's a gap, but I can tell you that, you know, now they're at 8,500.
Digging deep, man. All right.
1947. This is according to Ferrari Life, which is kind of an enthusiast site. Mm-hmm. And I found these numbers elsewhere as well. You know, it's not just one place. 1947, the production number, three.
Three cars?
Three cars.
Well, they were just getting started.
Three cars. Yeah, exactly. It's post-World War II, just getting there, just beginning. But in fact, you can find a video of the very first car online, a Ferrari, the first road-going car, which is still in existence. There's
That's
a guy that
– Bananas.
Ed something. Ed starts with a W. He lives out in Arizona, and he's got several – I think he's got a dozen cars that he's kept over the years. He's collected since he was 11, I think. You can see a little YouTube video of him and the car. The car runs and drives, and he's entered it in many events. The guy's just standing outside of a barn with a bunch of old piles of junk around him, tractors and things, and he's got this
Ferrari,
the very first Ferrari road car in his garage. And he brings it out, and he's got a, you know, baseball cap on, scruffy beard, overalls. Not somebody you expect to be having the first Ferrari. He's owned it since 1968.
I've got to ask, Scott.
Yeah.
You say he started collecting cars when he was 11?
11, yeah. Yeah, he traded, and I thought, you know what, I have this somewhere.
That's weird, though.
Yeah, he started collecting his first, it says, here's an article that I found online. His first acquisition was a 1920 Dobble steam car that he traded 2 tons of hay for, and he kept the Dobble up until last year. So
wow.
He keeps these a long time. But he has 12 cars, and they're all in different museums.
Mm-hmm.
This Ferrari, however, it was in his barn. And it's in pretty much, it says it runs strong, it looks good. It's in basically an original condition, so it's never been painted. I think he put new gauges in it maybe at some point.
Okay.
But everything else is all original. The thing looks pretty amazing, pretty authentic, original.
That's a heck of an advertisement.
Where'd
they go from three?
Oh, from three. Let's see. We talked in 1947, they had three. All right, I'm just going to skip through the years here and some of the milestones. But by 1957, he was up to 113.
Okay,
that's Enzo Ferrari production, right? By 1970, it was like 928. Broke the 1,000 mark in 1971, where the production went up to 1,246. In 1980, so 10 years later, production's already up to 2,470.
But by the time we hit the 80s there, the Ferrari was still what I would call a waiting list car, right?
Yes. You know, at that point it was, and even more so now. And that's another thing we'll talk about in a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, by the time they got to, let's see, I think it was around the early 90s. It was around, like 94, I see here. The production was 2,671. And when they were breaking that 3,000 mark in 95, they were going to, a lot of people kind of spoke up and said, what's going on? You know, why so many? And of course, the company wants to make money. The company wants to get their cars out there. They're fantastic cars. And if they're still built to the standards that they were always built, why not? I mean, I don't understand why they would do that. I mean,
sure.
Of course, the people that own them want them to be exclusive, but, and they're willing to pay for that too.
That's part of the brand.
Yeah, exactly. And you're paying for part of that exclusivity in that, you know, it's a hand-built car. It's very low production numbers. So then you can imagine what it was like, you know, in 2001 when they're up to 4,305. And ready to break into 5,000 the next year. They're even talking about 6,000 in the next few years, which, as we know now, they've doubled that number.
Yeah.
So from 1947 to 2001, the total production, all Ferraris in the world that have ever produced road cars, anyways, 96,699. So it's well above 100,000 cars at this point.
Wow.
But, you know, again, we have to talk about the ones that have gone away and, you know, et cetera, just aren't on the road.
As a point of comparison, we've got this in the article, too. The Ford F-Series trucks in 2009, Ford Company made more than 400,000.
No kidding.
So over 1 year, they made more vehicles than the entire
400,000. Yeah, you're right. You know what?
Ferrari run.
Oh, they made four times as many.
Yeah,
as the entire Ferrari run, and that's from 63 years ago.
Wow,
is that right? Am I right? 73? Yeah, 73, something like that.
You know, I was raised with the calculator, Scott.
Yeah, let's just leave it at that. And so, anyways, I mean, if you think now that sounds like a lot of cars, right? They built 100,000 cars.
That sounds like a lot of cars.
Well, I've got 2009 production statistics, and these come from a place called OICA, O-I-C-A.
OICA?
I don't know if they actually say OICA or if they just say O-I-C-A.
They probably say O-I-C-A.
It's been around from 1919. It's a Paris organization. It's the Organisation Internationale des Constructeurs d'Automobiles.
You baffle me with your command of French.
Yeah, I know. I sound a little bit like Pepe Le Pew. But really, it's been changed now to International Organization of Motor Vehicle Manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Easier for me to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find them at OICA.net, OICA.net. And they have production numbers from 1998 all the way through 2009, and very detailed production numbers by country, by the number of cars, commercial vehicles, you know, a total of both, of course, and a percentage change from the previous year.
Nice.
So looking at the numbers here, and I've got them – I shuffled them by the number of cars. And China comes out at number one for 2009. They produced 10,383,831 cars.
10 million cars.
10 million cars were produced in China. And that's not including the commercial vehicles, which are another 3.5 million.
Dang.
Their total production was around 13.75 million vehicles.
So almost 14 million.
Almost 14 vehicles. Million vehicles in China. And then if you want to go up the list, number two is Japan with 7.9 million USA was number three on the list at 5.7 million. Germany, 5.2 million. South Korea at 3.5 million. And it goes on and on up to about, you know, the 50th, which is Serbia, you know, where they have 10,000 vehicles. So there's a dramatic difference in numbers here, and you'll see where the cutoffs are if you shuffle them different ways. So total production for 2009, are you ready for this?
Here we go.
This is the number of commercial vehicles and cars combined total.
Approximate.
Almost 62 million vehicles were built last year.
Where are we going to find 62 million people?
62 million parking spots.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, 62 million people's easy, but the parking spots, come on.
A lot of people get in the cars.
You're talking about 62 million cars on the road just last year, brand new. Now, you know, there's 8,500 Ferraris total. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a tiny, tiny little drop in the bucket, really.
Right.
I mean, so when you're talking about numbers like this, I'm trying to get to the point that there's still an exclusive club. You still, mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of live near one of these places, near a Ferrari dealership. I see them going back and forth, and that's it. I don't really know where they live or, you know, see them on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Just the, you know, the maintenance vehicles or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
You know, mechanics taking them for a ride, test drive. That's why I see them. But I'd say it's still fairly rare to see a Ferrari on the road.
Absolutely.
Fairly rare. Not entirely in all areas, but fairly rare.
And stop me if I'm stealing your thunder here, buddy, but one thing that we need to point out at this point is that need to point out at this point? Really? Sorry.
No, that's all right.
Let's just go with it. Mm-hmm. So one thing that is very important to remember when we talk about the exclusivity of a Ferrari in the modern era of auto manufacturing, if you look at the proportion or the ratio, then Ferraris are inherently more exclusive than they were before.
You know what? You're right, because overall worldwide production was much lower at that point when they're making 900 cars, mm-hmm. much, much lower. You could argue that it was 10 times lower,
sure.
which is, you know, what it is. It's 10 times the amount that it was then. Mm-hmm. So, maybe it's staying pace, you know, just keeping pace with the rest of the world as far as production numbers go percentage wise. I don't know. We'd have to really dig deep and find out the numbers from, you know, 1962 and find out where they were then compared to worldwide production is where they are now compared to worldwide production.
Yeah.
That would be the only way to do it.
That's the only way. Let me ask you though, what's your take? No, let's get a bit philosophical, Scott. Mm. What's your take on Ferrari's move toward more modern means of assembly? Mm. Like, we've got this great part in the article where we learn that originally Ferrari's workers who cast engine parts had to train for a long time. And I think what's our statistic? Now it takes about a week, a little more than a week or so.
Something like that.
Because of that automated assistance we were talking about with the robots.
Yeah.
And with these pieces of leather, for instance, being cut in other locations, do you think Ferrari is losing something?
You know what? I think they do. Yeah. I think it does lose some of the mystique, some of the charm of the vehicle in that it goes away that, you know, every bolt is not put on by hand and hand tightened. It's some of it's being, well, the machine, you know, the engine's being built by machine or most of it anyways. I know some of that's still hand operation, but, it's not the way that, you know, the guy walks over to the parts bin, brings back, you know, 8 pistons with him or 12 pistons with him and then, assembles the entire, you know what I mean? It's just not grabbing each part, looking at each part in your hand, inspecting it, making sure it's correct and then putting it in, tightening it to spec and then pushing it down the line to the next guy. It's not that way anymore. Now I know that the rest of the car is very they're very careful and they're very attentive to detail. But, I think just having robots involved in the process is taking away something from the brand just a bit.
You know,
what do you think?
I gotta say, you know, usually I'm much more of a futurist, I guess would be the word. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to something like this, the exclusivity, that sort of intangible quality of the amount of detail and human effort put into building these machines, I do think that there is something lost there. Unless Ferrari is also making the robots. If the robots are handmade, then I feel like that.
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think they're Ferrari
they're
robots.
They're not handmade robots.
No, they're not Ferrari robots, and they're not handmade robots, I don't think. You know what? Maybe they are handmade robots, but they're probably not Ferrari robots.
Here we go. Scott and Ben's official business advice
exactly.
for Ferrari.
No, no, no. And I think, you know, I'm sure that there are other cars out there that are still completely hand-built.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, it takes a lot, you know, a lot longer than you might think. I mean, if you were talking about a combination automated hand-built assembly process that takes 3 weeks on a car, that's an awful long time compared to, you know, the number of, F-150s that they're cranking.
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah.
You can't build 400,000 F-150s by hand every year. You just can't do it. You don't have the workforce to do something like that. And I'd argue that you can't build 8,500 Ferraris by hand each year. I think it's just too much.
Yeah, I think you're right.
No, it's just too much. I mean, they'd have to run, you know, three shifts like we were talking about, and then you're getting to the point where, you know, maybe the working conditions suffer a bit, and, you know, the people get tired. And
how do you source the materials? Because especially on the interiors, you know, we're talking very high-end stuff. So it might be that there's not enough of this material for some component of the vehicle to exceed a certain number. Per year.
Could be. Oh, yeah. You mean you're talking if they get up into the 20,000 mark or something like that. Well, they're talking that, you know, it's going to go up to 10,000 soon. And I completely see that happening because if they're at 8,500 now, they're just going to continue to refine what they're doing right now. And of course, you know, if you're cranking out cars that are worth $200,000, you're going to want to build 1,500 more a year than you currently are, because what does that mean for you in revenue? It means a lot more.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
But Scott, watch as I shake my fist in futile anger at the sky. Why won't the price go down?
Yeah, well, maybe they will.
Maybe they will.
Maybe it's funny to say it, but if the market's flooded with Ferraris, then maybe the price will come down. But you know what? If we look at the numbers like what we talked about, it's just not going to be that way.
No,
it's not going to be flooded with them. They're still a low volume production facility. And I like it just the way it is.
Yeah, me too. So if you are a Ferrari owner, never you fear, your vehicle is still just as exclusive, perhaps even more so than it was possibly when you bought it.
Exactly. And it just becomes more so with age.
Mm-hmm. You know what this makes me think? Maybe in the future we could take a look at some handmade cars.
Oh, very good. Yeah, because there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
There really are. I mean, more than you would think. More than you would think.
Definitely more than I would think.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, we'll find some obscure examples and get them in here.
Well, I guess that means it's about time for us to head out.
Sounds
right?
good.
Yep. Sounds good. Of course, you guys already know about our Car Stuff Facebook. If you don't, please be our friends. We're awesome on the internet. We're also on Twitter,
Car Stuff. Car Stuff HSW. That's the easiest way to find us.
And we also have a blog where you're going to find all sorts of information that maybe didn't make it into an article.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah?
Sometimes, yeah. I've been using it mostly for podcast updates and things like that, but sometimes I'll throw some extra stuff in there. I've been adding a lot to Facebook and Twitter here and there, so taking up a little bit of the blog stuff, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
And our question for you guys today is, do you own a Ferrari? Do you want one? We won't give you one, but we would love it if you sent us an email at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com. /compatibility.
If you're committed to living a healthier life, you might want to look into working herbs into your wellness routine. There's a reason people have trusted them for thousands of years. Nature's Way understands that nature is the ultimate problem solver, and they're constantly inspired by the power of nature. For example, their ginger root and slippery elm bark have been traditionally used for digestive support. And St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support. And because Nature's Way sources from around the world and does a ton of comprehensive potency and quality testing in their state-of-the-art lab, you can be sure you're getting top-quality herbs. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.